Thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We are always glad when you're here with us. And if you'd like to take part in our conversations on the exchange, feel free. The phone number is here, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We get used to terms like housekeeper and groundskeeper. Riverkeeper is a more modern term. As the name implies, riverkeeper programs are all about protecting and restoring key rivers, and the riverkeeper programs are part of a larger global system called the Waterkeeper Alliance. Our region alone is home to the Willamette Riverkeeper, the Coos Waterkeeper, the Rogue Riverkeeper, the Klamath Riverkeeper, and the Humboldt Baykeeper. We have guests today from the Rogue and Klamath programs. Conrad Fisher is the executive director of the Klamath Riverkeeper Project. He's on the phone with us. Conrad, welcome.
Thank you, Jeff.
And here in the studio, I have Forrest English, who's the program director with Rogue Riverkeeper. Welcome, Forrest.
Thanks, Jeff.
And Robin Jansen, who is the clean water campaigner for Rogue Riverkeeper. Welcome, Robin.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So let's learn a bit about each of you in turn, and we'll start back with you, Robin. Tell us about yourself and how you got involved with the Rogue Riverkeeper program.
Well, I am a native Southern Oregonian and grew up in Ashland. And I started actually raft guiding when I was about 19 years old, so I've been a river guide for 18 years now. And love the rivers around this area, guided on the Rogue and the Klamath, and over the years wanted to get more involved in really working on protecting those rivers, and especially the Rogue watershed area. So I started with Rogue Riverkeeper about a year ago, and have been really enjoying it, and really enjoying being on the other side of that relationship with the river and the watershed, and working to restore and protect it.
What were the things that you noticed when you worked as a guide, for example, that made you feel like you wanted to do more than just be on the river, but actually to do something to help the river?
I think, there's the recreation in this area around the river is huge. And, I think most of us get out there to swim in the river and raft the river and fish in the river. There's just a ton going on and a lot of opportunity. So I would see people out there really enjoying it. But I think there's a lot more, or I just thought there's a lot more that we can do to get involved to, expand wilderness areas and protect it from pollution. And I just really wanted to step onto that kind of other side of working with the river. And I had that really intimate physical relationship with the river, but I wasn't kind of stepping out of that box and getting more involved as far as protecting it. And so I think there's a lot more that we could do around that. I think a lot of the folks that use the river could get a little bit more involved in that area. And we all really love it. We really care about it. And it's a huge kind of vital part of this valley, obviously. So,
Conrad Fisher, let's come to you, Executive Director at Klamath Riverkeeper. Tell us a bit about yourself and how you got involved in the program.
Yeah, my family's been in the Klamath Basin for four generations, and I've recreated on the Klamath for much of my life. And I've also been an activist for different causes, social justice and environmental causes, my whole career. I guess my first entree into water issues was noticing that the creek next to my house that had juvenile coho in it was being completely dewatered in the summer, so that led me to figure out that it was pursuant to an illegal water diversion that there was no longer water in this creek. So I ended up working for different organizations on water issues. I've been with Klamath Riverkeeper for a little over 2 years, and I'm lucky to be here. I'm in my favorite place on earth and working on the most important causes.
What happened to that illegal diversion on the creek near your house?
Good question. It has been, in California, there are applications to appropriate water, and basically as long as you apply, the state will look the other way and let you continue diverting water. So although it's a pending application, the state of California said it's unlawful, but we'll do nothing about it. So it continues to this day. There's a local watershed group, not Klamath Riverkeeper, doing an investigation of that water right to determine what it is, to maybe ultimately resolve it. But it's unresolved to this date. So far, I've been the only one to actually enforce the law, and that's kind of what I learned right off the bat with that water dispute, that although there are federal and state agencies that are in charge of upholding the public trust doctrine, which says the public has the right to water flowing in streams and rivers, although they're supposed to uphold the Endangered Species Act, which says you should not allow species to go extinct, they, more so in California probably than other states, don't have the political will to actually physically go put water back in creeks where it's being illegally taken out.
So in the case of that stream you're talking about, the water right is assumed until ruled otherwise?
The state won't even say you have a water right. They'll just say you have an application for it, mm-hmm. and we're not going to enforce it. In cases where there are more people around, I should say, if there's another human user of water, the state will get in the middle. But if it's between a human and a fish, the fish always loses.
All right. And Forrest English, let's hear from you about how you got involved with Rogue Riverkeeper.
I've been an activist, again, on usually media and social justice and environmental issues for over a decade now. But professionally I used to work on stream and wetland restoration, dam removal and wetland delineation, mitigation, that kind of thing. And I used to be a commercial fisherman in Alaska. I guess I want to make sure that, the fish that I used to depend on for my living, that those resources are still around in the future. So I want to make sure that they have habitat, clean water and, unpolluted waterways to rear in and, reproduce.
And how long has the Rogue Riverkeeper program existed?
Rogue Riverkeeper was started in 2009. I've been here for about 3.5 years. I started, primarily doing water quality sampling and moved into working on mining issues and stormwater.
There's always something going on, isn't there?
Yeah, there's always a few things.
All right, we'll pick up the conversation on the other side of a break. We'll take that now. We're talking to Forrest English and Robin Jansen from Rogue Riverkeeper and Conrad Fisher on the phone from Klamath Riverkeeper. And we can talk to you as well. Share your thoughts, your comments, your concerns about things going on with streams in your neighborhood. And we'll bring these up to the Riverkeepers on the Klamath and the Rogue. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. Back with Forrest, Robin, and Conrad, and you in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Today we're talking about Riverkeeper programs, part of the larger Waterkeeper Alliance around the world. We're talking to folks from Klamath Riverkeeper and the Rogue Riverkeeper program. Conrad Fisher on the phone is the executive director of Klamath Riverkeeper. Forrest English is the program director here in the studio of Rogue Riverkeeper. Also in the studio, Robin Jansen, the clean water campaigner at Rogue Riverkeeper. Let us talk about rivers and how they are maintained and restored with the Riverkeeper programs. Join this discussion at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. Which one of you is most familiar with the history lesson of the Waterkeeper Alliance, which apparently begins with the Hudson River in New York, I understand?
I suppose I can take a stab at that.
Forrest?
Well, it sounds like you already know, but the Waterkeepers were sort of the genesis was commercial fishermen on the Hudson, who saw the river that they depended on for, their livelihood, their recreation, et cetera, being destroyed by pollution from, oil plants and power plants and paint and sewage. And, they got to the point where, they just couldn't take it anymore. And so the story goes, there was a big meeting where, people said we should, cram a bunch of dynamite up, the pipe and, make sure that, plant never does anything to harm our fish again. And somebody said, well, there's this law called the Rivers and Harbors Act that lets us turn in polluters and collect bounties on them. So they got a boat and started patrolling the river and, they started turning polluters in and they had to stop polluting. And now we, primarily use the Clean Water Act, which protects the rights of Americans to be able to swim and drink and fish in our rivers. So it really, protects our right to clean water.
Is there much discussion back and forth? I mean, do you keep in regular contact with the folks at the Waterkeeper Alliance, or is it pretty much you get the name and you set it up and do things in a more or less prescribed way in your own neighborhood?
Yeah, I mean, we have a, we do things the way that, we see fit in our watershed. The idea is that we live in our watershed, so, we would know the most appropriate, tactics and strategies to, fix the problems that we see. But we certainly coordinate with folks at the Waterkeeper Alliance, and, we certainly have, an information exchange there that can be helpful.
Conrad Fisher at Klamath Riverkeeper, we already established that the Rogue Riverkeeper program's existed since 2009. How long has the Klamath Riverkeeper program existed?
The Klamath Riverkeeper started in 2006. but it was an outgrowth of a larger movement to restore the Klamath River.
And what was the was that several different organizations involved with that earlier effort?
So the impetus pretty much started following the 2002 fish kill on the Klamath River when about 60,000 salmon died because of policies that were not leaving enough water in the river. That, I think, brought a lot of constituents together who had previously worked separately, including the various tribes on the lower and upper Klamath, commercial fishing organizations, environmental organizations, even businesses that depend on recreation. So a lot of different interests, and then government agencies figured out they had to have a collective solution. So that united a lot of different groups, and it was largely out of tribes and conservation organizations that Klamath River Keeper was formed. So currently on our board, we have representatives from each of the four largest tribes in the Klamath Basin, three of which are in California and are the three largest tribes in California, and then the Klamath tribes of Oregon.
Is there a fair amount of cross-pollination in the sense that does Klamath River Keeper have people from other environmental organizations as well, or work under the aegis of another environmental organization?
No, I mean, we're a member of the Waterkeeper Alliance, but we're an autonomous environmental organization. We collaborate when we have things we agree on with other organizations, but we don't work under any others.
All right, I want to talk to you later on about the long-term perspective as somebody who's from the Klamath Basin, going back four generations and seeing the changes just in recent years since the fish kill in 2002. But I want to take some phone calls here. Let's start with Wolfgang. He says it's not Sunny Valley today. It's Cloudy Valley. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Conrad Fisher from Klamath River Keeper, Forrest English, and Robin Jansen from Rogue River Keeper. Go ahead, Wolfgang.
Hi, good morning. I hope it's going to get sunny a little later. Hi, Robin. Hi, Forrest. And I don't know Conrad yet.
How's it going, Wolfgang?
Hi, Wolfgang.
Hi there. As we know, and I think it's important for the public to understand that the system of which the public and you guys and the state agencies are part of is a complaint-based system, so that if somebody files an application, it's like court. You know, everybody lies in court, but unless you prove they are, they're considered to speak the truth. So you file an application, and it's not like you have to prove everything is okay on it. Okay, the same thing applies for people who do what's called the agency shell game. You know, that they file with a lot of agencies and tell each agency that the other agency signed off on it. So what I'm getting at, in a way, is the public doesn't have the know-how you have, and the agencies have, and the public doesn't have the know-how the consultants have, and the lawyers, the specialized lawyers have. So I think that you have a special chance, and I might say obligation, to support the public in what they can do, what they can file, and sort of enable them as well as take on stuff, because it's the public without being informed has very little chance. They're always at the short end of the stick, and industrial users, industrial interests, like the mining thing that we have, the proposed mining thing we have down here in Sunny Valley. I mean, that guy is spending thousands, 10,000, and 100,000 on lawyers. We don't have that. So that's where you come in, and that's where Water Watch comes in. And I think to really close ranks on many cases, you don't have to spearhead them all, but to close ranks on these cases would be really, really wonderful.
All right, let's get a response, Robin or Forrest.
I think what Wolfgang's saying, you know, is largely true, that you know, our system of environmental laws is complaint-based. I think that, you know, serves to highlight the, you know, importance and need of, you know, watchdog groups like Klamath and Rogue River Keeper that, you know, can take that role advocating for the public's right rather than, you know, just kind of letting the system roll along.
Let us take another call. We have Steve and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about River Keeper programs with Forrest English, Robin Jansen, and Conrad Fisher.
Hey, we've all heard about what happened in West Virginia. I'm wondering if in your neck of the woods you have any facilities that you consider at least potentially problematic in terms of maintaining the health of the river should they fail. I know in Springfield we've got this one plant that produces glues for plywood and pressboard and such, and they have about 20,000-30,000 gallons of formaldehyde sitting within a half mile of the river. We've also got a Monsanto plant. I imagine it's worse in Portland. Are these a part of your concern, and or do you primarily just look at river flow and such as that?
All right, good question for that, Steve. I want to start this one with Conrad, because the rivers are somewhat different in how they're used. And so why don't you start with the Klamath and about facilities that might be of concern there. I suppose we can include dams in this, which are a major issue, obviously, with the Klamath River.
Sure. As far as direct point source pollution, there's a lot more industry in West Virginia and Portland than in the Klamath Basin. Most of our concerns are about water quantity and diversions and taking out the dams. Most waterkeepers focus largely on pollution, but that is one of our three campaigns, but dams and diversions are our biggest focuses. I think there are a lot of other organizations that focus more so on pollution.
So when you say no point sources, there are no factories in particular?
I'm not saying there aren't any. I mean, yeah. If I was worried about a spill like what happened recently, I mean, trains carrying awful things could be part of that. Maybe Forrest and Robin would talk about the potential pipeline up across the upper Klamath Basin and the Rogue Basin that broke. That could be horrific.
Yeah, we have a question coming in about that one, still waiting online. So let's turn it back to Forrest and Robin about facilities that are of concern on the Rogue.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, the Rogue is significantly less urbanized than Portland or, you know, most areas of West Virginia we're talking about. But, you know, we have pretty large sewage plants that are, you know, an ongoing issue in many ways, you know, and large storms or floods could be a bigger one. You know, and there certainly is dozens of industrial facilities on the Rogue. You know, an issue there is predominantly industrial and municipal polluted runoff called stormwater that we get when it rains, being one of the larger issues there. And then, you know, I think the biggest issue that might be similar to what the caller's asking about is a proposed natural gas pipeline that would, you know, cross the Klamath and the Rogue, as well as the Coos, the Coquille.
All right, hold that thought for a second, because I want to bring in a call here, because I think it's on the same subject. Cynthia and Talent, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about the Riverkeeper program with Forrest English, Robin Jansen of Rogue Riverkeeper, and Conrad Fisher of Klamath Riverkeeper.
Yes, I'm very interested in this issue of the proposed LNG pipeline and how that might impact our own Rogue River here, which, of course, is a source of drinking water. I know they're using eminent domain or trying to use eminent domain to get easement and land through, and it's a private company, a for-profit company. How does that work? And what can we do as citizens? I know that it's federally decided, these kinds of things, but what could we do to influence the outcome of this proposed pipeline, which I think they're proposing next year for doing some construction. I'd love more information. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call, Cynthia. Appreciate it. And we're talking about the pipeline leading away. This is, leading to now, because it's an export facility at Jordan Cove and Coos Bay.
Right. So the pipeline we're talking about is called the Pacific Connector Pipeline. The goal is to export gas from fracking in the Rockies and the interior west of the United States and to export it to Asia. The pipeline would be constructed from Malin near Klamath Falls to Coos Bay. And like I said, it would cross the Klamath, the Rogue, the Coos, the Coquille, the Umpqua, and, you know, hundreds of tributaries, you know, throughout that region. You know, so I think the impacts are pretty far ranging. You know, it's basically talking about a 235-mile clear cut that would then, you know, put a very large power plant and an export terminal in Coos Bay. You know, the blast zone, if there were to be an accident, contains elementary schools and, you know, that sort of thing. You know, as well as stream clearings and sediment and, you know, the temperature impacts and, you know, the big elephant in the room, climate change. You know, we're talking about increasing the demand for fracking and, you know, increasing the amount of fossil fuels that we would burn. So I think, you know, the eminent domain question, the argument they're using is that because shareholders would make money that trickle-down economics would benefit the American people. And so that is the public benefit argument for using eminent domain to seize private property, you know, throughout our region. You know, and I think what we can do, I mean, there's going to be a huge public process with the federal agencies probably around March. The draft environmental impact statement is going to come out. And the state has a lot of power in this, actually. So now is the time to ask the governor to oppose this project and have the state agencies deny those permits.
You can join our Riverkeeper discussion on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Robin Jansen, I want to come back to you because I want to talk about the tools you have at your disposal. I mean, we're talking about things like, you know, contact the governor, lawsuits, things like that. I get the sense from the title Clean Water Campaigner that you tend to work on the happier side of things, trying to get people interested in river issues before they get particularly ugly.
Yes, definitely. I hope so, at least. Yeah, and I think, you know, we, again, the Rogue and the Rogue Watershed and the Klamath Watershed are such vital parts of these areas and rivers that we just love and cherish. And I think, you know, for us to just kind of take them for granted and take these issues, not pay attention to these issues is, you know, we're not doing ourselves any good. And so what I try to do is really organize with the community and get people involved. And, you know, whether that's holding a raft trip celebration around the Rogue or a cleanup day or, you know, what have you. I do try to kind of, yeah, bring people into the mix and get them involved and get them to kind of realize how important these places are and this public water, these waterways are for us and why we use them and how we can take care of them. And anything from, you know, I've been lobbying with senators up in Salem and, you know, doing letter writing campaigns. And I mean, there's so many different ways to get folks involved and to kind of use those tools, as you mentioned, to just to educate and get things done.
What is the biggest public event you do at Rogue Riverkeeper in a year?
It's a celebration event that we've put on the last 2 years in September. So we do a raft trip and then a big barbecue. And it's really just to celebrate this river and this watershed and why we live here and why it's important. And it's been very successful and people love it. And it's just a great way to kind of get out there and really enjoy this place and celebrate it.
Conrad Fisher, what's the biggest event in any given year for the Klamath Riverkeeper program, the biggest public event?
We're putting on a range of events, but in the last 2 years, that has been our paddle and party. So we take between 40 and 60 people down the Klamath River during the day, and at nighttime have a big party with lots of music and dancing.
All right, so you get people to know the river a little better, a little more
intimately. Know the board members. We're also hosting a series of events, at least in the lower Klamath Basin, if not the upper Klamath Basin, to teach community members about the causes and consequences of toxic algae. So the dams on the Klamath produce some of the highest levels of toxic algae anywhere in the world, and a lot of community members don't know how to identify it. We'll show pictures so people can know how to identify it, and we'll talk about the consequences of impaired rivers, like toxic algae and also lost access to traditional food sources for Native people. And then finally, we'll discuss what people can do about it. So a lot of people, particularly in the lower basin, are upset about what's going on and want to do something about it but don't know exactly what. So I see it as my job to stay engaged in the government processes and tell people when there are pivotal moments when they can write letters to policymakers, call policymakers, attend rallies. We actually organize rallies and help people get to them. So mobilizing the community basically to advocate what is in their own interest.
How broad or narrow is the geographical focus of Klamath Riverkeepers? Of the entire Klamath Basin, say, from the Williamson River all the way to the ocean?
Yes.
All right. Back to the issue about dams and algae. Why do the dams produce the algae? They actually produce the algae, or
produce it, they make it worse. Mm-hmm. So before Europeans came here, the Klamath River had the species of algae that are toxic. However, they occur at much higher levels for two primary reasons. The contribution of nutrients from agriculture in the Upper Klamath Basin, and then the worst part of it is they sit in the reservoirs behind the Klamath River dams and bake in the sun and turn into an antifreeze green that I don't see how anyone would want to get into. And that's where the Kadook tribe has recorded some of the highest levels of toxic algae known to science. And at certain times, it makes it all the way down to the mouth of the river. So in the last couple of summers, there have been health advisories, basically signs that say, watch your kids, watch your pets. If you get in the river, it's risky. So when it's really bad, it makes it all the way to the ocean.
We will talk more about the challenges facing the Klamath River and the Rogue River with Conrad Fisher, Executive Director at Klamath River Keeper, Forrest English, Program Director at Rogue River Keeper, and Robin Jansen, Clean Water Campaigner at Rogue River Keeper, back with our guests to talk about the river systems and how they are preserved and protected. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange when we return from this break, back here with our guests and you in a minute 25. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Today we're talking about riverkeeper programs. There are several in our area, actually waterkeeper programs under the Waterkeeper Alliance. They include the Willamette Waterkeeper, the Coos Waterkeeper, the Rogue Riverkeeper, the Klamath Riverkeeper, and the Humboldt Baykeeper. We have reps from Rogue Riverkeeper and Klamath Riverkeeper with us. Conrad Fisher is the Executive Director at Klamath Riverkeeper, Forrest English Program Director, and Robin Jansen, Clean Water Campaigner with Rogue Riverkeeper. You can explore with us as we explore the rivers and find out about the projects that are going on to help preserve and protect these rivers for future generations. The phone number is here, 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782, and by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We were just talking about how the dams on the Klamath River appear to promote the growth of algae by making the water so darn warm. But the same thing does happen, as you pointed out during the break, Forrest English, on the Rogue River as well.
Yeah, Lost Creek Reservoir in particular has pretty major and increasing every year now persistent toxic algae issues. So we'd like to make sure that they at least don't spread. But I think it's starting to be time that DEQ looks into that and figures out, what's causing it. I assume nutrient issues again. But what the causes are and, how we really stop that from occurring again.
You mentioned DEQ, the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, which raises a question about regulation here because Conrad was making it clear that when it comes to, a farmer versus fish, the fish loses in California because of the regulatory bodies generally turning the other way. California is a very big state, and obviously the Klamath River is very far from the political and geographic or population centers of the state of California. Oregon's a bit different. I mean, do you find slightly better issues with regulators in Oregon, or is it about the compared notes with Conrad and come up with pretty much the same stories?
I think it really depends. I mean, on some agencies, the case is definitely going to be very similar. And I think some of the agencies certainly have the right idea at heart. I know that DEQ is also significantly underfunded for, what we're asking it to do. So while I think a lot of folks there are trying to do good work, I think they have certain limitations, both, in the rules themselves, your role, working in the government. And it's very difficult, to advocate for things within the government, without risking your job. And they're simply, underfunded and short-staffed. They don't have staff in Southern Oregon that do a lot of the things that, we would like them to be doing. Frequently there's, a part-time person in Eugene that, might work on some of these issues down here. So I think it depends on, what it is specifically, really.
As far as, this is Conrad, as far as Clean Water Act enforcement, we deal with state agencies, the DEQ in Oregon, and the Water Board in California, because they're the entities in charge of basically interpreting and enforcing the Federal Clean Water Act.
Sure, and of course the Klamath does cross the state line.
So we have a lot more faith in the California side in terms of upholding the Clean Water Act and protecting the public from the impacts of toxic algae. So the Clean Water Act plays a pivotal role in whether or not the dams come out, so we're going to have to start giving more attention to Oregon Department of Environmental Quality to be as strong as California has been.
All right, let's talk about the dams coming on. I can't believe I've gotten to 35 minutes in this conversation and still haven't asked you yet what is going on with the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, the KBRA, the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement, the KHSA, and where you see the progress or lack thereof, Conrad Fisher, on taking the dams out of the Klamath River.
So I tend to call the Klamath Settlement Agreements to encompass both of the agreements, the ones for dam removal and hydropower relicensing. So in 2011, there was a bill introduced that would have implemented the Klamath Settlement Agreements. It did not gain much traction in Congress. A lot of people felt a little despair when the bill didn't quite make it. In just this last year, in 2013, the Klamath tribes gained recognition of an old in-stream water right for endangered fish in the Upper Klamath Basin. And at the same time, there was a drought, which created a political impetus to not only have congressional hearings about Klamath dam removal, but to create a task force. The task force was predominantly between the Klamath tribes and the Upper Klamath Basin irrigators who were not part of the settlement agreements, to basically address the reasons the 2011 bill did not pass. So at the end of this task force meeting, I was at the final meeting, Senator Wyden from Oregon said he would introduce new legislation that he has more hope for in early 2014. So hopefully first quarter of 2014 we'll see a new bill and maybe it'll pass this year.
But there has to be a pretty good chunk of funding attached to any bill to be able to begin to affect the actual removal of the dams, doesn't it?
Right, and the funding for dam removal and the associated restoration projects, that was a big part of the new bill. So it's a financing dance to decide which agencies will pay for it, whether it's new appropriations versus existing appropriations, and on top of all that, a certain portion will come from both the Public Utilities Commissions in Oregon and California. So that was reorienting the numbers and bringing the cost down was part of creating a new bill that has potential to pass.
For the folks at Rogue River Keeper, it sounds like the regulatory thicket is not quite as thick for you folks, but also consider the fact that in recent years the Rogue River has lost both Savage Rapids Dam near Grants Pass, an irrigation dam, and Gold Ray Dam, a former power dam near Gold Hill. So in some ways, do you feel like you're paving the way? Sorry if pavement's a bad use of terminology here, but blazing a trail, as it were, for potential dam removals on other rivers, including potentially the Klamath?
Yeah, I mean, I think fortunately we've passed a point in our country's history where, you know, we're no longer making dams, you know, faster than we're taking them out. We finally realized, you know, the benefits of having healthy fisheries and, you know, clean water that's not brewing toxic algae behind it. You know, so I think where we have, you know, major fish-killing dams, you know, I would hope that we're going to keep following that example of, you know, the ones on the Rogue and the white salmon and, you know, other rivers, you know, throughout the Northwest that have had dams removed and are seeing, you know, fish returning immediately.
Is there any discussion of any tinkering with the two existing Rogue flood control dams, the Lost Creek, which you mentioned is a bit of a promoter for algae growth, toxic algae growth, and an Applegate. And, of course, Elk Creek was never finished and was finally notched.
Well, I mean, I think Elk Creek, you know, is certainly a possibility for moving.
Moving completely, not just notching.
Right. You know. I think it's going to be a long road before, you know, we get to Applegate or Lost Creek, honestly.
So what are some of the issues that still are outstanding? We've talked sort of generally about some of these things. Let's get more specific then about things like, let's talk about mining, first of all, and how that would impact, how it does impact the Rogue River at this point. And we'll follow up with the Klamath River as well.
Yeah, sure. As I've been on before to talk about our work on section dredge mining. Section dredge gold mining is a form of in-stream gold mining where you take basically gasoline-powered vacuum and suck up the, you know, stream bottom. And spit it back out looking for gold. As you can imagine, this is, you know, sort of harmful for fish habitat. I mean, the gravels that they're sucking up are what fish use to spawn. And, you know, if you destroy the habitat that fish use to spawn, I mean, you're going to have less fish. It also goes down a lot deeper than winter floods frequently do into the riverbed sediments, and has been found to mobilize toxic mercury that can be, you know, stored there for, you know, millennia.
Just naturally occurring mercury?
We have both naturally occurring cinnabar in, you know, the Rogue system, and I think the Klamath as well, as well as there's a significant amount of legacy mercury from the mining, you know, days of the past Mercury is used in the mining process to extract gold. So there's a lot of old mercury that, you know, is down there from those days.
Is it just the suction dredge stuff you're concerned about, or is it larger scale mining operations? Because there has been some activity in recent years. I know there was a concern about. I was just looking yesterday. American Rivers had declared Rough and Ready Creek one of its most endangered streams. Rough and Ready, a tributary of the Illinois, which is a tributary of the Rogue.
Yeah, I mean, suction dredging is a significant one. I mean, we've been working actively on legislation that passed last year. That would, you know, more increasingly regulate those activities, as well as other public lands mining issues. Usually medium scale, some large scale gold mines, and nickel mining is another thing that keeps popping up time and time again. So I mean, the nickel mines are, you know, large strip mine proposals. So they would be really nasty. They're like the larger legacy mines in the Rogue. Like Blue Ledge, that are leaching toxic metals into the rivers, all day long.
Yeah, bad one. We've talked about that before. Conrad Fisher, give us the perspective on mining issues that face the Klamath River.
Yeah, so the Lower Klamath in particular was one of the last places in California where gold miners came. I mean, there are still native people alive today for whom Peduk or Hoopa is their first language. So the memory of what gold miners did in the 1850s is still in people's conscience. In more recent years, an organization called the New 49ers, which I consider an affront to Native people and glorifying a horrific history, came here and started marketing mining claims, so marketing chunks of river to people, unsuspecting people with gold in their eyes from all over the country. Just on my property alone, I've had three different families come saying, I'm going to live here now and gold mine in the river, because the New 49ers have convinced them that by paying for this mining claim, they can live on the shore in front of my house and mine in the river, which is not the case when it overlays private property. So I think there's a lot of deception going on, taking advantage of people's gold fever. In just the last few years, through a litigation, the Kaduk tribe managed to get suction dredge miners off every river in California. There's still a back and forth in the courts, and Klamath Riverkeeper is now party to a litigation to ensure that the law is interpreted in such a way that they stay off of the rivers in California. So that was a victory for us, but a burden on Forrest and Robin and everyone in Oregon. So I'm
because all the suction dredge miners went north, right?
Yes, so I'm very hopeful that I can help get them out of Oregon as well.
You mentioned litigation. I mean, what are some of the tools in the toolbox for the Riverkeeper program? And let's start with the Klamath folks.
Yeah, I mean, our first choice is to engage, educate, and mobilize the different stakeholders in the river, the people who depend on the river for food, for their health, for recreation, and in the case of tribal people, cultural survival. So all of those interest groups have an interest in a healthy river, but often don't have the opportunity to engage and to voice their opinion and have their voice heard. So that's kind of our job, basically feeding people opportunities to comment or show up at key meetings or hold rallies. When that doesn't work, we have to resort to litigation. Just weeks ago, we settled a case on the Shasta River, which is the most productive salmon habitat in the Klamath Basin, and by some accounts, the most productive salmon habitat in all of California.
Oh, we did just talk to Craig Tucker about that yesterday, yes.
Okay, yeah. So that was a recent court victory. We had another one in 2011 that prevented a license that would have allowed water diverters to kill endangered species. And in the course of the dam removal, the fight to come up with a settlement to remove the Klamath dams, we had litigation that forced the U.S. EPA to regulate toxic algae, which in turn brought PacifiCorp, the owner of the dams, to the table. So litigation sometimes is, although it's difficult and expensive, it's sometimes necessary. But I definitely prefer advocacy when it's possible and collaboration when it's possible.
Forrest English and Robin Jansen, I'm going to assume the same toolbox, but let's talk about funding. I mean, how are the Riverkeeper programs supported? Where does your income come from?
I mean, I would just first echo everything that Conrad just said in terms of, you know, tactics. I think one of the important things about Riverkeepers is that we are willing and able to enforce the law when the state is not willing or able to do so. But I would say, you know, we're member-supported as well as private foundations, as, you know, where the bulk of it comes from.
And are you tied closely to another environmental group or just on your own, or how does that work?
Rogue River Keeper is a program of the Columbus Siskiyou Wildland Center, so we function within that structure.
So let's talk now about how people get involved if they're interested in Riverkeeper programs. Why don't we send this one to you, Robin, about what they can do? I mean, what are some of the things they should be doing, even if they don't necessarily want to become a member of Riverkeeper?
Sure.
Or something like that? What do they do?
There's so many different things people can do. And I get asked this question all the time, and, you know, you can become a member for $35. It's really easy. You can do it online. You can fill out a form. That's really basic. You get our newsletter. You get invitations to events. There's all kinds of things that kind of come along with that. You know, you can – there's volunteer opportunities. You can write letters for us around different campaigns. You can – I mean, there's a long list, I think, and a lot of different ways that I've been able to organize with people and get them involved. And again, as basic as just writing a letter or a letter to the editor around the LNG pipeline, or becoming a monthly donor and, you know, volunteering at events that we have. So there's a lot of different ways that people can get involved. And
Conrad Fish, I want to pitch the final question to you, which is, since you've got this four-generation look at the Klamath Basin, is the Klamath River improving over time? Has it in your lifetime?
I think the numbers of fish have declined in my lifetime. The political situation has improved, I would say. I think the hope for long-term restoration has improved, but the actual numbers of fish and quantity of algae has increased, unfortunately.
All right, so much work left ahead for both the Klamath River Keeper and the Rogue River Keeper programs. Conrad Fisher is the Executive Director at Klamath River Keeper, Forrest English, the Program Director at Rogue River Keeper, and Robin Jansen, the Clean Water Campaigner. Thank you both for joining us today, all of you for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange today.
Thanks for having us, Jeff.
That'll do it for today's exchange. You'll find out more about the program and subjects, and you can suggest a guest at jeffexchange.org. We provide show topics and recordings on our Facebook page. Same links are available on Twitter. The Takeaway is next on the air in the morning. BBC News is next on the air in the evening. Tomorrow on The Exchange at 8, we'll talk about wood stove regulations getting stronger in the state of Oregon. Our Vents Day segment will include a discussion of whether pit bulls should be regulated. And then at 9 o'clock, we'll meet the author of The Activist's Handbook, now in a new edition. That's all tomorrow on The Jefferson Exchange. Our producer is Charlotte Duren. Our student assistant is Reed Newland. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Please join us again tomorrow at 8 for another edition of The Jefferson Exchange here on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. And have a great day.